This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
I think about the love of money being the root of all evil, as opposed to money being the root of all evil. I think that's a really important distinction. And I do believe that if we are called to do great things with our life, then we can't become that fullest version of ourselves if we're just treading water.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another fabulous episode of the Color of Money podcast. You'll be delighted to know that today we have all of our co-hosts with us. We've got Bo, we've got Daniel, we've got Uncle Emmerich, and we have a special guest for you all today. His name is Matt Maurizio. But let me tell you who Matt is. So recently, I had the honor of being selected, I guess you will say, because it was an invitation-only kind of thing. John Clyde, who you all have heard on this podcast before, encouraged me to sign up for a coaching cohort with John Maxwell. And this particular coaching cohort was called High Capacity Leaders. And it was a group of CEOs from major companies and high leaders in high places to talk about leadership and increasing our leadership. And in this cohort is Matt Maurizio. And when all of the things happened with the executive orders to ban DEI and things, I reached out to this group, this cohort of leaders, to see if anyone would be willing to speak to me about the challenges that we're having with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And Matt was one of the first people who raised his hand and said, I'd love to talk to you about it. And I had a great conversation with Matt about that. In that, I learned a lot about what Matt does. And Matt works in the wealth building space with an organization called Reconstructing Wealth. He's a financial expert, and he's dedicated, and I do mean dedicated, to transforming people's lives and people's relationships with money. So he's an entrepreneur like us, small business owner like us, and had some great stories to tell. He's a former professional baseball player with the Kansas City Royals. He's got a beautiful wife and seven children. Yes. So I would love to hear from someone with seven children how you ever have any money at all. But nonetheless, Matt, I'm going to let you introduce yourself because you got a lot of cool things to say. Welcome. And who are you?
Well, thank you so much for having me. What an honor. Geez, I don't have much else to say. You had a great introduction. I appreciate that. I would say that, you know, this life is incredibly full and it just tends to get fuller. And I am incredibly grateful for it. But yes, I live in Charleston, South Carolina. I have seven children. The oldest is 13. The youngest will be two in May. So it's been a hectic decade and a half. I launched this Reconstructing Wealth, which is they're called Registered Investment Advisors, which my industry does a wonderful job of being confusing about just about everything, including how they title businesses. It's an independent investment firm. So financial planning, investment management, that's primarily what I'll do with people. And the reason I named it Reconstructing Wealth, and I think maybe this is a cool place to start, is I learned after thousands of conversations with people about their money that we don't share very much about it with anybody. Socially, it's a bit taboo to talk about money, which I don't think is okay. I'm on a mission to change that. But after those thousands of conversations, I realized at some varying degree on the spectrum, we all have some jacked up relationships with finances. And typically, it's inherited from our parents and from their parents and so on. And it passes generation to generation. And because we don't talk about it and we choose not to bring it up, we just adopt whatever mindset and emotional state our parents and their parents had with money. And we just embody that for the rest of our life. So the reason I named it Reconstructing Wealth is because I'm on a mission to change people's relationships with money, to reconstruct their relationship from the inside out. Now, people don't come to me because they say, hey, I think I'm pretty unhealthy with money, in the same way people don't go to Jenny Craig to say, hey, I think I emotionally eat. You know, like people don't say that. They say, I need to lose 20 pounds and a few inches on my waistline. So people need help with their financial plans. They need help with investment management. And we do that. But I really believe lasting change is a result of an inside out kind of change when they reconstruct how they relate to money. So it goes from one of scarcity to abundance, one from confusion and hope to a dedicated plan aligned with their values. Like their life starts to change. There's a trickle effect, a downstream effect in so many other areas of their life. and I've seen it. I'm case study number one. I've experienced it firsthand. So that's the reason for the name.
Now, I was going to ask, like, having had this experience of working with people who are coming, thinking maybe they've got an outside problem and finding that you've got an inside problem, what are some of the things that in your work are the biggest reconstruction building blocks? Like, what are the things that you see most that folks come with for our audience to kind of get a sense of what they might not be seeing?
Well, I think in general, people have anxiety and fear toward money. And I think from my experience, it comes from a place of unknown, fear of the unknown, anxious about the unknown. I describe it like this, you know, like way back going into your freshman year of high school, that end of the summer leading up to it, you started to have a lot of nerves and anxious thoughts about who's going to be in your classroom, who your teachers, are you going to get lost, are you going to get all the things that accompany entering your freshman year of high school. But fast forward to the Friday of that first week, 80% of those fears kind of dissipate because you know where your homeroom is and where your teachers are and about how to get around the classroom, what your schedule looks like, who's in your class, like all the questions that you didn't have answers to are now answered. And yeah, you might have still some healthy anxiety about attending school, but 80% of it disappears. Well, from my experience and the conversations I've had with money, most of people's anxiety is because they kind of live like that almost ninth grader, end of summer, eighth grader. They never walk into high school to figure out what it's like, meaning they don't talk about it. They don't take the time to learn about it. And therefore, they live with this anxious feeling toward their finances their whole life, mostly just because they don't know, not because they can't understand or they're not smart enough.
Well, Matt, do you think this is a earn before you learn type of concept or a learn before you earn type of thing? Because the vast majority of people aren't going to get to the point of investment and wealth management and some of those additional things. You got to create the revenue source to get there. But do you think that people should be learning early, even before they've made the money, before they can feel like a seasoned freshman?
Yeah, I think currently in society, it's typically a earn then learn approach, which I like how you said that. I'd never heard that before. But I think earn then learn is how people approach it today. I believe that learn then earn is probably a healthier and smarter way to approach it. For a number of reasons, you think about like the stories and the case studies of the lottery winner that goes broke and what the percentage of lottery winners that go broke. They didn't take the time to learn. They earned in a really rapid windfall format. And then because they embody all of their old habits and identities and relationships with finances and money, their body really works and their mind really works to go back and retreat back to what they know. They end up losing it. So I do think that learning before you earn is the healthy, more sustainable way to maintain wealth as you start to accumulate it. Because like my baseball career and you guys and your successes, you know that real, true, lasting, long-term success is a result of disciplined, consistent habits repeated day after day, week after week, month, year, and eventually real success happens. It's like the 15-year overnight success story. That's how wealth, real wealth is built for 99% of people. It's not because they won the lottery or they were drafted by whatever sports team. Those are the one in the millions. So I think like understanding what the process looks like to build wealth, how to use money as a chess piece on a chessboard, not emotionally react and respond to money coming into your bank account. I think if you know that stuff, when you do earn, new questions arise, but you have a pretty solid foundation of what you think you're supposed to do.
But when should that start? Outside of being a finance major in college, is this a middle school conversation? Is it a high school conversation? Early 20s, like?
Yeah. So my kids, the oldest is 13, youngest is 2. We homeschool, which yes, if you're thinking it makes us even crazier, I agree. But on Mondays, I'll host like a 15-minute Money Monday session with them. And really what I'm teaching them in easy to understand way from not a 2-year-old, but really like my fourth graders through my seventh grader, I talk to them about how the game of money works. And I give them real life examples, but I'll use things like chocolates and stuff to make it relatable. And I will tell you that my 13-year-old, he one time came to me, he wanted to buy a new baseball bat this is on his own just recently. He came to me and he said, hey, I have a question. I'm like, okay, what's up? I need to buy this bat, but I don't have enough money yet. I think I can go about it two ways. Would you be either willing to hire me if I can do some jobs for you that you want to take off your plate? Or could I take out a loan from you and hopefully not too high of an interest rate? I'll pay you back. And I'm like, holy smokes, you know? Mm-hmm. Just the fact that he's thinking and asked that question because he wants to go buy a new bat, something's sticking, you know?
What was your answer? What'd you do, Matt?
I hired him to do some things. Yeah.
Like, I'm a sucker. I would have just went and bought the bat.
Well, I felt bad if I wanted to loan him and charge interest. Right. But I figured if I could get the leaves blown.
You got to pay to play. That's the way this world works, isn't it?
Yeah. But you know what? That's the critical component that's missing in a lot of houses. That whole idea of, from the beginning, giving them that thought process that this takes work, it takes effort. There are rules to money. And so have them learning the rules to money early really, really matters, and practically applying it. Because sometimes we know the rules, we understand that there are rules to money. However, if we don't have a practical application, we don't understand the rules.
But I think what I heard you say, Matt, is obviously you were planting seeds along the way. That question didn't just come out of nowhere. He has some understanding of the concept of interest, of the fact that you have to earn money to get things. Those principles have already been installed in him up until this point where he would ask you that question. And going back to something that we said before, even about people's anxiety and fear of money, because they maybe haven't had those conversations in their household. And for a lot of people, that anxiety and fear of money comes from, I did make some decisions that weren't great, and I'm overcoming some challenges. My anxiety is around the fact that I already lost everything before. My anxiety is around, I invested some money and it disappeared. So in your coaching, for those kind of people who have overcome some anxiety or the fear of money is related to either a lack of ever having it or having it and having made wrong decisions, what strategies do you think you could recommend for people who have faced financial setbacks and maybe are looking to rebuild because their fear is coming from mistakes that they've made?
Well, I think understanding the mistake you made is probably really important because you don't want to make the same mistake again. My overarching goal for my children and anybody I speak with is really to help them emotionally detach from money so that if they emotionally detach from their finances, they look at their moves not as much as good or bad, and more so that worked or that didn't go as planned. And that's a subtle, nuanced distinction, but if we can get there, then we can probably make new decisions that help us for future earnings. But I recognize that, and I think about building this business, there was a time where I couldn't buy a cup of coffee for somebody if they asked. I had to borrow my mother's credit card to buy groceries for my kids. And it was really hard and really emotional. And I'm in this space where I'm teaching people how the game of money works, all the while living this financial nightmare personally. So I'm selling a dream and living a nightmare simultaneously. And I guess I say that to relate to the people who have lost a lot and wonder, where do I go? I think about, one, it's really hard to beat somebody who won't quit. So I think there's an old Babe Ruth quote that goes something like that. Hard to beat the man that won't give up. So I think about that a lot. I also recognize that money itself, again, this helps me emotionally detach, and this probably will help somebody who feels like they're at rock bottom trying to figure out where to earn. Money itself is just paper. The exchange of money is a result of an exchange of value. Like, I brought something to you that you felt worth some dollar value, so you'll give it to me. Back in the day, it was salt and gold and other things that meant something. And I think about that, like, what unique gifts has God given me? What unique circumstances and positions am I in right now that I can go and use toward serving other people? And in that service, they're willing to exchange some cash for me. And I tell my kids, like, other people don't want to mow their lawns potentially. The reason they pay you to mow their lawn is because it buys back their time so that they can go hopefully earn more money doing their thing than the $50 they pay you to mow their lawn or whatever it is. So I think somebody at rock bottom has to recognize you've got unique gifts that you can use to serve other people. And if your mindset is there, then money will follow, because that's just the exchange today, how it works. Back in the day, it was salt or gold or animals, cattle, whatever it was. That's where I would try to live in, because it's so easy to live in the headspace of, I don't have enough, I'm struggling, this is hard. But that becomes this like repeating cycle if you live there. So I would really get out of that and try to get into, what gifts do I have and how can I use them in the service of other people? And eventually that turns into income.
I'm interested to know, if we're talking about reconstructing people's relationship with money and thinking about wealth like that, what trends have you seen? Is this a race gap? Is this a income from parents gap? Is this a age gap? Like, what trends have you seen with the people that you help?
That's a good question. I found that the biggest trend that I've noticed is the people who are willing to speak about it tend to be the most successful with it. And that doesn't mean they have the most in the bank account, because I know some people who have a lot in the bank account who struggle and self-described as terrible with money and awful. And like, those are not healthy ways to describe themselves. So the best with money, what I define as the best with money, is they have the healthiest relationships with it and usually make the best decisions financially with it. And it's because they're willing to speak about it, and in conversations, they learn how it works. One conversation after another after another. That's the biggest trend. I don't see the trends in race or income levels or anything like that. It's from what happens around the dinner table and in the home as a child growing up that I've found most of the time that those people become better with their finances down the road.
And that's talking about the wins and the losses, right?
All of it.
What mom and dad are going through, dealing with. Yeah, being authentic. That's
yeah,
crazy.
Being open to share everything about money. If it's going well, not because you're showing off. If it's going poorly, not because you want to cry, poor boy. It's just because this is where we're at and this is how this thing works. And those that had those conversations with their family, or if the family doesn't do it, they've sought out people in their life that they can ask questions to about money specifically, and they're willing to share back. You know, it's a hard thing to find because, like I said earlier, socially it's so taboo that it's hard to broach the topic with people like, hey, how did you buy that boat or whatever? You know, I mean,
well, there's a lot of shame that goes into not being able to pay your bills for your children either, though. There's a lot of lessons that go into that. But I mean, like, things are tight. How do you communicate that to your kids without them making you feel you're broke? You never want to have your kids feel your pain as a parent, you know, so it's a fine line on how do you communicate it effectively to share the wins. But I think there's more lessons in the losses than, you know, how I got the boat.
I can tell you how I did it. I don't know that I have the right answers, but I can speak from experience more than share the what the textbook says. I don't know if there is even a textbook on this. But going back, it's probably 6-7 years ago at this point. I remember even before that, if I rewound 2 or 3 years prior to that, I'm a man of faith, so I was really praying a lot about the next step. I knew that the career I was in wasn't going to be the long-term one for me. And I really felt like God led me into this space through a lot of me hemming and hawing and pushing and trying not to. But I really felt like this was the right next step for me. So I went into it, and it pretty quickly took like a pretty hard nosedive because I had no connections, no network, no clients, no nothing in the space. And that's where it got into... Shoot, I actually tried to I know we were talking about a refinance before we started recording, but I tried to refinance my home to get some cash out to pay down the credit card bills so that I could go back and be able to continue to feed the family, just stretch the runway out a little bit longer on the airport. And it felt like this plane was trying to take off and the runway stopped because the refinance hadn't closed yet. And I was at the spot where I'm like, shoot, I don't know what to do. So I had to actually borrow my mother's credit card. For about 3 weeks, the refinance closed. I was able to pay her back. I was able to buy groceries again, pay down the debt a little bit, right? I'm like treading water. I'm extending the runway. All the while, to answer your question in a bit long-winded way, I was sharing along with the kids that, hey, look, it's hard right now. This is part of building something special. And if I didn't feel like God led us here, I would be more worried. But because I feel like this is where we're supposed to be, we aren't led here to just fall on our faces. So I do believe like there's going to be good that comes out of this. And at the end of the day, what I'm trying to build is to serve other people, to really help change their lives. So we're in the midst of building something that is going to really profoundly affect, hopefully, generations of lives. But right now, we're in the early stages of this ball game, and it's very common in entrepreneurship for the early stages for things to be really tough. So we're tight now.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believe we're going somewhere special. So I was honest about now, but I was very clear with painting the vision of the future and how bright it is. And why it's bright is because we're serving other people in a way that's going to change their lives. You know, so the kids actually will say to me sometimes as I go out the door for work, they call me Papa. They'll say, "Oh, Papa, go change some lives today," as opposed to like, good luck at work, you know?
Yeah. Right.
I think I've overdone that saying with them, but that's what they'll tell me as I leave.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
It's interesting. You just talked a lot about, on one hand, the emotional connection to money can get us all sideways in fear, and the value of detaching from that emotional connection. Yet on the other hand, this idea that money is a tool towards a broader purpose. And so how do you think about the role of purpose or meaning or direction or feeling destined to something? And how does that relate back into money? You just spoke about it a little bit there in your family experience, but how much do you think that sense of purpose or knowing why one is building wealth plays into somebody's experience with wealth?
That's a really good point. I think about the love of money being the root of all evil as opposed to money being the root of all evil. I think that's a really important distinction. There's a common misquote, but the love of money is the root of all evil. So long as I'm not chasing the dollar is valuable and important. And I do believe that if we are called, which I think we are all called in some way, shape, or form to do great things with our life. If we are, then we can't become that fullest version of ourselves if we're just treading water. And like it or not, even churches need money to run. So In order to function in today's society, you need a healthy amount of money. You'll need to be able to take care of your home. But if you're going to ever help other people, you need more than that. So I recognize, okay, there's a calling on all of our lives. And if we are treading water, constantly fearful, in a state of worry all the time, then we will never become that fullest version of ourselves, who we're created to be, because we're living in this space of lack, right? And like, I don't think those truest blessings come until you really can get beyond that, outside of yourself, to be able to serve other people.
Imrik has a saying that I always think of that it says, the best thing you can do for poor people is not be one of them. Right. And that's real
that's
because
really
you can't help people if you ain't got nothing to help with. Right.
Yeah.
You can't help people if you can't even help yourself.
Yeah. Julia, I don't know if you remember John Maxwell at one of our events. He talked about leadership trickling from the top down, not influencing from the bottom up, which is why he goes into different countries, literally countries, and speaks with figureheads of the country, leaders of the country to promote change. And he flat out said it, and it like hit me like a ton of bricks. He said, you know what? It's why missionaries don't work. It's why mission trips don't work, because they go to the bottom of the ladder and they help a life or two because they built a house for some couple people that needed it. And that's admirable work. But there's never lasting change in that community because influence and leadership trickles from the top down, not from the bottom up. I was like, oh my gosh. And typically in our day, to be able to have that level of influence, it typically takes a certain level of wealth to hit the person, you know, at the top that can influence the masses.
You said something about money. We were talking about money, and it's one of those things where it does take money. And I have another one of those sayings. I said, money is not the most important thing in the world. However, next to air is a close second. And if you don't believe me, try living without it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's real. So, but one of the things with you, Matt, is you keep talking about these lessons and your children and your lessons and these children. In your space, you have the ability to transfer that information to your children. In other spaces, other people, they don't know the lesson themselves, so it's hard for their children to get the lesson. So now, as adults, they're making an attempt in a lot of cases to learn it. And I guess that's your biggest client, is the person who didn't have the parent that was there to teach them about money. So now they come in at this stage of the game and they want to learn money. How difficult is it to get people to change their habits and really be willing to learn? And I heard something this morning, and I actually posted it. It says, the more you pay, the more you pay attention. So if people pay a little bit of money, pay a little bit of attention. People who pay a lot of money, pay a lot of attention. People who pay no money, pay no attention.
So, yeah. You know,
how do you get the people to be willing to change their habit and their thought process around money? Is there like some magic formula about that? Because, you know, we all have these habits and we go someplace to get somebody to help us change our habits about money.
Well, here's a little, I call it a hack maybe, a little approach I use that sometimes helps. And first I will say, that person, like an alcoholic being willing to go to their first AA meeting, they first have to admit that they could work on things and they want to, right? If they don't have that desire, I can't force them or convince them. That's a losing battle. But if somebody is at that place where they recognize there are habits that maybe could be worked on, they don't even have to have this confession of, man, I need to work. I need a ton of work. I'm a sponge. Teach me. It doesn't even have to be there. Sometimes the money isn't the first domino, though, and that's my hack. I've learned that being great with your money, understanding how that money works, is part of a personal development journey. I look at money as part of on the umbrella of your personal development or your personal needs. We as people are very quick to help others before we help ourselves, which is why we'll fall off diets or exercise, or if they had a financial plan that they needed to put together that somebody else needed help, job needed work. So if somebody is reluctant to actually get into the money stuff, like, I don't care about the money. I hear that a lot. Like, I don't care about it. Whatever. I believe I have enough. I got it. Like, I don't care. I don't want to talk about it. I'll talk with those people about other parts of their personal development journeys to see what they're doing. Like, do you read? You listen to podcasts? What do you listen to? You go to the gym? What do you do in the workouts? What kind of workouts do you do? Do you follow any kind of diets? Are you in a group, men's group, women's group, Bible studies? You go to church? I ask all of those questions because all of those are questions about this personal development journey. And I've recognized in my own life personally, I've recognized that when areas of those parts of life, faith, family, fitness, money, wealth, when those any areas of those are growing and I'm working on them all, they operate sort of like a rising tide. Whereas one starts to rise, the others, they don't, not in lockstep, but the others tend to follow. You know, like you start to get in shape, it's a trigger for you to start to, I want to get my money in order too. You know, like that tends to happen. So I will tend to try and poke in different areas of people's personal development journeys and encourage growth and see what I can do to participate in that growth there. Understanding that at some point along that chain, that money domino is going to fall. And I want to be able to be there to be able to support them when it does.
I believe that about high achievers. High achievers are normally high achievers in more than one area, right? High performers typically high perform in more than just their workspace. They might do well. And like yourself, you know, you were a professional baseball player and you perform high in the wealth, but you're a high achiever. But even high achievers sometimes encounter financial obstacles, which then I think for them especially becomes less of something that they want to talk about because they are a high achiever. Are there any particular unique challenges that you've seen that high performers or high achievers face that they maybe don't want to talk about? And how do you help them overcome those obstacles?
There's nothing more embarrassing in my experience for people, high performers, high achievers, people who are really on the surface crushing it in business, or athletes that have signed big dollar contracts. There's nothing more embarrassing than for them to admit for the first time that I got no idea what I'm doing with my money.
Yeah. And I asked that question, Matt, because in real estate, we have a lot of agents that make a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. And then what is their profit? Nothing. They don't have any money. In fact, they're negative a lot of times. And so for those people who are like, you know, they're driving fancy cars, they're selling million-dollar houses, and yet maybe bankrupt, maybe whatever. That's why I'm asking, because we have a lot of real estate agents. That's the case.
Yeah. I've learned that there are giftedness in different areas of wealth. Like people can be gifted at earning the income and have no idea what to do with it once they have it. Then there's others who don't earn a lot, but you hear about those people who just squirrel away money their whole career and have $3, $4, $5 million in the bank after never earning more than $100,000 in their entire careers. And I've learned that if that person is willing to talk and admit, like, I'm not great once the money comes in the door, what I tend to do is stroke the egos wrong, because people aren't necessarily egotistic, but...
They are here, Matt.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So reinforce the fact that, like, you are great at earning income. That is a gift of yours. You just need to get a little bit better and understand how to use it effectively once you earn it. You know, how to assign dollar shovels, basically, to every dollar you get. You know, go to work, you know? Every dollar I earn, I think about, like, I got to assign work for that dollar. So if people can embrace that mindset, or at least be willing to speak and admit, I'm really good at earning it, not so good at figuring out what to do once it's in my bank, and if it stays there long enough, I'll just spend it. Like, identifying that as the problem on the chain, let's fix that problem. That works for high achievers, because they're like, okay, I get it. Like, it's not, I'm not bad. It's just, there's a break in the chain. I just got to fix the chain. I got to understand it. And they will outsource it sometimes. And that's why people like me exist, to be able to help people sometimes in that form. This is probably the most boring and the most profound thing I could say about money, that wealth, true wealth building, is just a ratio. As long as less is going out the door than is coming in, you will build wealth over time. If you can figure out how to keep that ratio intact, where the money coming in is greater than the money going out, you're going to build wealth over time.
I think we're making the mistake in thinking that everybody wants to build wealth. That's not what the journey that everybody is on. Some people are very okay just making the money, spending the money, and living that life. I don't want to have kids. There's nothing to leave to anybody. And I'm going to run this play the rest of my life and enjoy it. And I think that the authenticity of people to identify, what am I after, helps this conversation a whole heck of a lot more. Because we all care about people. We see what's on the other side of hard work and building wealth. And I think all of us have pushed, pulled, kicked, driven these people to get to this area of life that we want for them and not that they want for themselves. So I think it's a very interesting thing to think about.
Does that go back, Daniel, though, at some point to this idea of purpose? Money's a tool to achieve a purpose.
Yeah.
And what's the purpose you want to achieve? And if your purpose is just enjoy the moment, then some of these questions about long-term things that we put in this wealth category are irrelevant to you. But I think the goal in my mind is to match the role of money in your life with the purpose of your life. And if you can take money and make it part of that purpose, the concept or the conversation about wealth building becomes about, how do we help people connect money to their purpose, rather than about do we just build this abstract wealth?
Yeah, totally agree.
That's good.
But it takes authenticity. Mm-hmm. It takes the realness of, what is my purpose? What am I building? I ask people that anytime I sit down with them. What are you building? What are you after? What is the game plan? What are you thinking? Because it triggers the rest of the conversation so much easier for me. Because not everyone's on the same journey that we are. And it's unfortunate, because I think there's really good tools that everybody has. And if you do these small things, a friend of mine just told me that if you put $236 a month away in the S&P in 30 years, you'll be a millionaire. Wow, that's pretty exceptional to do or to think about, you know?
Yep.
Wait, is that true?
I don't know. I haven't fact checked it yet. It sounds great though, doesn't it?
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, I'll do that today. That's a great idea. If it was only that easy. And how long does it take? And what is it? But anyways, Matt, you've been a wealth of knowledge with us. Our time is running out, and we appreciate the information that you shared with us. What are last thoughts? What's the one thing that you would like our audience to take away from this conversation?
Bo, you just were speaking on it, and it made me think about it, and I think it's now is as appropriate a time as any to say it, that across the board, doesn't matter how much money people have or how big their businesses are, I will say 100% of the people that I've talked to, been mentored by, are clients of, that exceeded their own needs, like their own personal needs are met. Kind of like you're talking about, Daniel, like how much wealth do you really need to build? 100% of them, at some point on that journey, it became about other people and seeing other people build other people up. So if you want the hack and the shortcut to figure out, what am I trying to do with my life? Just know that at some point, it's probably going to become about other people. And if it just stays about you your whole life, you probably are leading a life of total unfulfillment. Mm-hmm. You'll get to the end and say, man, what was the point? Mm-hmm. So 100% of the people I've talked to, mentored by, interviewed, our clients, they all say their joy comes from serving other people, seeing other people succeed, helping other people with their life as a result of the wealth they built, the business they built. That's the point that I would like to leave.
That's a good point. And that's exactly what we're doing on this podcast. That's why Bo is here. I'm sure he's got plenty of money. We're not, by the way, we're not paid to be here. You know, we're here because that's the mission of this podcast as well, is to help other people learn some of these tools and the strategies that you shared with us today is important to other people so that they too can go on whatever their journey is with whatever their purpose and their big why is. So Matt, thank you again very much for being here. Guys, any final words you want to say to Matt or our audience?
Oh, this is awesome. I just want to say thank you to Matt. I love the perspective and thank you for bringing it because it's such at the heart of what the sort of soul of this podcast is all about. So just thanks for joining us.
So cool. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here, Matt. We really appreciate it. You have definitely been a benefit to the program.
Thank you for that.
Well, friends, that's it for this episode. Tune in to another great episode of the Color of Money podcast. Until next time.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.